Live from the center of the Razorback universe.
The only radio show Razorback fans need to listen to.
Unbiased and unafraid.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ruskin and Zach.
Right now, for your enjoyment on the Ruskin Zach Twitter feed, the Ram It video with the LA Rams, which... I sit corrected. That's the worst pile of garbage I've ever watched.
It is really bad.
It makes Skidoo look like, Saving Private Ryan. I mean, it is horrible.
Yeah, I had that pointed out to me.
And the lyrics aren't good either,
No, they're not. No. There's no way that you can tap dance around naming a song Ram It.
Yeah, that's not just
there's just no way to dress that up and make that PG.
I don't know about
that. And
this.
The Rams didn't even try. But again, it was like 83-84.
And that's also the worst one because the Rams never did anything.
Well, now there were a lot. The Cowboys of the late 80s did one, and they didn't do anything either.
Well, they went 1-15.
But I don't understand what the obsession was with football teams cutting records. There were a lot of them. The 49ers did one.
Well, you know what? It might have been some money because the guys weren't, they weren't as rich back then as they were, as they are now. With the league and the finances.
Everybody remembers the Super Bowl shuffle. What they don't remember is how bad the Super Bowl shuffle really is.
Yes.
And then everybody...
Punky QB known as McMahon.
Right. Text of the 479 from Jay Stepp says the San Diego Superchargers did one too.
Why is it always Stepp texting us? We need to shake this up a little bit. Who else you got?
Well, it depends on... No, I've changed it up. There's been a Jay Chavis.
Oh, yeah.
Usually
he's got nothing but
when
time.
It surrounds food.
Good God.
I've changed it up a couple times. I would have like a P. Morris, but she never lived here.
Never did a load of laundry.
Yeah, she couldn't have a text out of the 479. Have to have one out of the 913. Too soon?
No, not at all. No, sorry. I'm here for all of these pylons.
Folks,
I don't care.
It is March 94th, and I am sick of this.
This is the 38th show without sports that we have done.
Yikes.
I believe. If it was 37 yesterday, that would be today's 38, right?
The texter wants to notice that his name is Justin.
Well, there you go. Justin Stepp.
There you go. Thank you, Jay Stepp.
Coming up later in the hour, RJ Ochoa, who covers the Dallas Cowboys. A lot of stuff to talk about with the Cowboys. Andy Dalton, the draft. Dax situation.
I'm going to ask him, I want your best Jerry Jones story. Because everybody's got a Jerry story. Even Nikki had a Jera story.
That's right, yeah. We have got to, again, if you do not follow social media, this won't mean anything to you. But if you do, we have to get this Nikki and her boyfriend property or House Hunters show made.
Yeah.
Because they do not agree on anything, and it would be terrific.
Well, as I told her, I'm like, you don't agree on anything, so you're ready to get married.
Well, it's about time.
Yeah, I mean,
come on.
And
no pressure.
Nikki doesn't understand that Nikki can basically say, we're doing this, and there's nothing he can do about it. Well, she holds all the cards.
Well, I just you ever watch House Hunters?
No.
There's always it's 50-50 to be fair. Sometimes the male is the jerk and they always focus on one like intricate detail that they need that they have to have that in practicality is not really a make or break. You know, like, well, I got to have somewhere to put my pool table.
No, not really.
You can live in a house and not have a place to put your pool. Well, I don't know. This one doesn't have a big patio. I like to grill. Well, you can figure out a way to. I mean, come on. It's back and forth. The woman, doesn't like this thing. There was one I watched where the woman wouldn't even go in the house. It was so bad. She's like, no, I'm not. Next.
You know, there's a cure.
Never seen that before.
There's a cure for that.
Yeah.
Well, buy the house yourself. You don't need one of other people to do that. I hear.
All right. We'll talk some Dallas Cowboys later this summer.
I've been texting back and forth with him today. I've got some questions. I want to know if
I would hope so because it is a radio interview.
I want to know if this Dak holding out thing, this the I'm not going to sign the 4-year deal. I want a 5-year deal. Is a clapback. at the Jones family for basically stringing him along. Now, look, he's going to get tagged if he doesn't sign the deal. He's going to make a lot of money next year. More than you, me, and DQ. Well, maybe, no, DQ still got a chance. More than you or me will ever make in our lives.
Even if we sell the masks.
That's tip money for Dak.
But we
can get into some Metroplex news with him.
All right. So,
remember Mr. Mixelplick?
No, I have no idea what that is.
Okay, never mind.
Mixelplick?
Yeah, it was a cartoon wizard or something.
Oh. We want to go obscure cartoons now?
Oh.
Hold my beer.
His neck just bowed up like, oh, you want to go now?
Remember Hong Kong Phooey?
Of course I do.
Hong Kong Phooey!
Yeah, absolutely. Well, he was a dog with a mask.
Of course I do. Magilla Gorilla?
Sure, Magilla Gorilla. Gorilla for sale. Why don't you try him? Take him home and buy him.
What were the go-to cartoons when you were a child in the 70s?
Underdog. I like Penelope Purebred. Okay. Which years later took on a whole different meaning. Scooby-Doo, of course. I grew up like in the age when cable television just came around. Did you watch the USA Cartoon Express?
Of course.
I love the Cartoon Express.
Of course.
Now, I did discover like in 79, like I lived close enough to Philadelphia where we would get like NBC out of Philadelphia. And every afternoon they would play a Japanese anime show called Star Blazers. The best part was that they dubbed over it with English speaking voices. So the mouths didn't match up right.
Yeah.
It's on the internet. It's still one of my favorite cartoons. Yeah. Star Blazers.
What was the old cartoon? This is way back. Clutch Cargo, where they would have, it wasn't even real animation. It was like pictures that were drawn and they didn't move, and they would superimpose human lips over the cartoon.
Yeah, okay, that would freak me out. Do you remember the old Hanna-Barbera Laugh Olympics?
No.
Now, that was on the USA Cartoon Express.
No. I remember being, because it's not like now where anything was available anywhere.
Right.
I remember that there was a long drought in my childhood where nobody ran Scooby-Doo, and I was very upset about it.
Because Shaggy was a stoner.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
And Cersei, that would not go over. You didn't want anybody acting like Shaggy.
But I remember the Smurfs.
Right.
Which were big.
Like Smurfette.
Smurfette, come on.
Yeah, one Smurfette and 100 Smurfs. Mm-hmm.
That's the
you did a math.
The bicycle of the Smurf Village there. Well, I'm just saying. God. Smurf's got needs too, Zachary. Come on. And I remember briefly watching He-Man, and then He-Man went away. So I didn't watch that anymore. And the Masters of the Universe. And then the cartoon wheelhouse for me, it starts with like Ninja Turtles, and then you get into DuckTales.
Oh yeah,
and the Disney afternoon block for a couple years.
Disney,
That was later. You know,
we were stuck with the Cartoon Express.
Yeah,
that's what I had. And then but I was 13 in like 85, so I was done with cartoons by then. Till I got older. Yeah. Now I actually enjoy cartoons.
Well, now the cartoons are laced with innuendo. Well, I'm sure they were then, too, but we didn't know. And, of course, you can't beat... I remember many mornings eating my cereal and watching old Woody Woodpecker
Looney Tunes.
And the Looney Tunes.
Yeah, Bugs Bunny.
Exactly, yeah. I never liked... was there ever a Looney Tune where you were like... They would show that one of these characters and you're like, oh, never mind. Like, I didn't... Pepe Le Pew never really did anything
I'm all right
for
with
me.
Pepe.
You know,
Marvin the Martian, love those.
I don't remember ever seeing those.
Really? You don't remember Marvin the Martian?
Well, I mean, I know who he is, and I...
Yeah, he was always with...
Yeah, oh, goody. You were making...
Yeah, he was with Bugs Bunny. He was with Bugs Bunny.
But I love... I like the Yosemite Sam.
Yeah. Oh, he's fantastic. Yeah. Well, you and Yosemite have a lot in common.
That's right. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. All right, good time. Daffy Duck. The DuckTales were great. I had, when I was 6, 7?
My God, you guys watched a lot. We're getting pounded with texts on what cartoons you used to watch.
When I was 6 or 7, I had all three of a stuffed animal of all three of the nephews, Huey, Dewey, and Louie. And the hardest one to find was the blue one, Dewey. We went all over this earth, my parents and grandparents, and we finally found Dewey somehow. I didn't know.
Did you ever watch Blue Falcon and Dinomutt?
No,
it was a robotic dog.
No,
no. All right, never mind then.
No.
Remember, what was Scooby's cousin's name? Scooby Dum? His nephew was Scrappy, right?
Scrappy do, yeah.
And like that. See, that's introducing a child into a cartoon.
And then when you would watch the Bozo show, there was a Bozo cartoon with a cartoon Bozo doing stuff on there.
Nope.
I remember that. Mm-mm. And then when you'd watch the WGN Bozo, they'd show Rocky and Bullwinkle cartoons.
Well, of course, Rocky and Bullwinkle were fantastic.
Hey.
It took a long time to figure out Rocky and Bullwinkle.
Boris and Natasha.
And what was the squirrel? The squirrel was Rocky.
Yeah, Rocky the flying squirrel. Yeah. Bullwinkle J. Moose.
And Sylvester was funny.
Yeah, I like Sylvester and Tweety. They always... Roadrunner was a favorite, too, because, I mean, nobody said anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. All you heard, the Roadrunner went. I like those. Yeah, all right.
I was good with that.
And then in the 90s, the Nickelodeon got into the cartoon business, and you had Doug and Rugrats and
Wheelie and the Chopper Bunch.
Brennan Stimpy.
Stimpy, you idiot! See, I liked, what was his name? Droopy.
Droopy.
I like Droopy when he got the Carolina job.
Yeah.
Come on.
I never watched
Roy Williams. Roy Williams looked like Droopy.
He does.
He does look like Droopy.
I never got in on Mr. Magoo.
Yeah, that was before your time, though. Jim Backus.
I'll tell you another one. Inspector Gadget.
Yeah.
Go Gadget Arms.
After my time. I missed that one.
In the 80s, Inspector Gadget with Don Adams voicing.
Yep.
And he would do little PSAs at the end, like G.I. Joe. Like, make sure that you eat your vegetables. That's not a great Don Adams, but...
Son of a...
I'm so limited here.
Freaking commercial. It's Ovaltine commercial.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Son of a...
We'll be back. Ruskin and Zach.
You think it, they say it. This is Ruskin and Zach.
Thought it'd be a good idea to get some perspective on some of the basketball. Well, Mason Jones, Isaiah Joe, some of the prospects as the NBA draft is going to happen at some point here when things resume. So for that, we bring in Brian Kalbrowski from HoopsHype.com, part of USA Today Sports. Brian joins us on the Williams Tractor Hotline. Hi, Brian. How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm always looking forward to talking about Mason Jones. That's somebody whose game I really, really believe in. I think that after getting to know him, through my interview and then really getting a chance to chat with him, I think that he's got a bright future in the NBA.
Well, and we'll pivot to him here in a moment, but I'm curious how league executives are scouting, are preparing for whenever the draft will be, since the whole calendar has been upended due to this pandemic. No workouts, stuff, combine has been moved, all that stuff.
Yeah, I think realistically you're getting a lot of people who are doing mostly Skype interviews right now, I think. Obviously team workouts are a huge part of the draft process, and obviously that plays a huge role in the evaluation of a player, but right now they're doing whatever they can to get a hold of these guys and just getting to them as people first. I think eventually you might be able to get them into gyms. But even at Portsmouth Invitational Combine for seniors and even at the NBA Combine, a big portion of what you're going to end up coming away from that with is experience of getting to know a player. And I think that they're using a lot of, Zoom calls and Skype calls right now, same way the rest of us are, just to get to know these prospects as people. And I think that one thing that is so important about this is it's really a job interview. And the more you talk to these people, the more you get to know them, the more you learn about them, the more you might like somebody or not like somebody. And I think you can really get a lot of information and intel from somebody in those calls. And I think that, players who come across as, well-spoken and, informed of what their game is and what their game could be are going to rise as the draft continues. So I think a lot of guys who come off well at an interview environment, obviously you see that, in pressers and stuff, who's good at those and who might not be, those are the guys you're going to keep hearing from during all of this.
What is it specifically? We'll pivot to Mason Jones here. You had a pretty lengthy interview with him. And when you look at some of the NBA mock drafts, there's some where he's kind of on the periphery looking, you know, he's on the outside looking in at the draft. And this is pre-workout thing. You had a pretty lengthy interview with him. What is it that you like most about him as an individual and him as his game as it translates to the NBA?
Well, I'll start with him as an individual. He's got a lot of confidence, and you know, there are some guys whose confidence comes off as maybe a little frustrating because I'm like, okay, what have you actually done to accomplish it? But I think that he has a nice balance there where he, you know, was, you know, co-conference player of the year, and he was the leading scorer in the conference. I thought he was one of college basketball's most prolific and best scorers, so it's not like it's unfounded for him. I think he's got a really good identity of who he is, where he comes from, what his strengths are and what his weaknesses are. He knows he's not an elite athlete, and I think that's really what is really the NBA executive's biggest concerns on him, too, is, you know, he's got you know, high body fat percentage, right? He's somebody who, you know, came to the game late, but I think that he understands that, and he knows that he's continuing to develop and change his body and become, you know, a professional athlete. And that's something that I think is really, really important, is that awareness, that sort of, you know, self-identification. And I think it's really helped his game form what it is today, as he watches guys like Luka and he watches guys like James Harden. And you can say you watch guys all you want, but when you actually implement them into your style, that's when I take an interest. And I think for me, the way he draws contact is very similar to James Harden. The way he can use his step-back jumper is very similar to James Harden. I think he uses a lot of his disadvantages, his weaknesses, to become actually his most elite skill set. He's one of the best rim finishers in all of college basketball in recent memory. He can get to the rack like nobody else, I think, and really score at an elite pace in there while also getting to the free throw line at an elite pace. And those are skills that, you know, while they might not translate immediately to the NBA, I think long-term can make him a potentially elite scorer for years to come, because it's not that he was just running ISO in college, which is not going to translate as well to the NBA. He was doing quite a bit more than that.
We're talking with Brian Kilbrowski from HoopsHype.com here on Ruskin and Zach. As far as his position goes, because we hear this all the time with different drafts, it's a deep year for you know, for big guys or for point guards or whatever the position may be. What is his position, that two guard spot? Is this a deep year in the draft? Is it just, what's your assessment on that?
I would say it's a pretty deep year for guards. Yeah, I would say definitely it's a deep year for guards. But realistically, I mean, obviously, LaMelo Ball is probably the most discussed two guard in this draft. He's kind of a combo guard as well. I would say Killian Hayes is probably next in that. The French prospect is 6'5", kind of a similar thing. But, you know, there aren't too many two guards that I like a lot better. I can say with confidence that I like better than Mason Jones. I would say Anthony Edwards, you know, playing in the same conferences as Mason Jones has, you know, a ton of draft stock behind him, but Anthony Edwards was fairly underwhelming during his year at Georgia. I think that, you know, Devin Vassell is kind of more of a wing. Kira Lewis is more of a one. But beyond that, there aren't too many guys at the two guard who I think are better definitively than Mason Jones. I think Tyrese Maxey at Kentucky is kind of in that conversation. Tyrell Terry at Stanford in that conversation. Isaac Okoro from Auburn is in that conversation. But to me, I think Mason Jones is somebody who I think can really stand out. And when you talk about the two guards in this class, should be in that same tier as RJ Hampton, Cassius Stanley, you know, in terms of that whole group of guys, I think he's right there with them.
He declared early and he sort of stuck to his guns and then ultimately signed with an agent. And then we saw a bunch of underclassmen start declaring after him, and it seems like everybody and their brother is declared for the NBA draft. Would he, in a perfect world or in a vacuum, maybe have benefited from coming back, or was his stock about as high as it was going to go?
You know, it's interesting. He's somebody who I think had such a good season that it's hard to get a sense really of what he could have done better in college next year. And because he played in community college, and because he, is a little bit older and came a little bit later to the game, it can be hard for a player like that to get significantly more draft stock when you're older, because a lot of times you want to see younger players. So he's at a nice mix right now of still young-ish without being, you know, exactly raw. Like, I think he can contribute. But one thing that I think is going to be really special about Mason is he's going to continue to develop his growth as well, because he's going to continue working on his body and becoming, closer to the NBA athlete that he knows he is. And he's not there yet, and that's why I have him as high as I do, is I think we're going to look back in 2 or 3 years and see him in much better shape than we've ever seen him. He recognizes that he used to be an overweight kid and wasn't an athlete, and he's kind of taken this life path to put his full strength and his full passion and the full idea of what the NBA could be to make it his mission. And I think, to me, I believe him when he says it. And so that's why I have him as high as I do. It's not just because of what he's done already, but what I think he's going to continue to do. And I think realistically, Mason is somebody who I think has a huge shot of getting a lot better. And that's a scary thought for me too. And that's why I have him as high as I do on my big board, is I think if he gets better, he's already such an amazing scorer. He already accomplished, so much at Arkansas in the last couple of years. 22 points, 5.5 rebounds, 3.5 assists per game, is pretty amazing. But he shot 75% at the rim, which is the best among all high major players who are 6'5" or shorter. That's for someone his size to finish that clip at the rim, that's amazing to me. But he also shot 14-for-24 from three-point range during the few games he played in March. That's 58% from three, right when the season's starting to matter the most. So to me, that also speaks to the idea that he could be a shooter at the next level as well. Obviously, it's a small sample size because it was only in March, and things get different, in March, obviously. But I think that, he can become a better defender too. I think he really looks at someone like Jimmy Butler, and he sees what Jimmy Butler does as a defender, and he wants to be like that. And I think if he gets to be a better defender and a better three-point shooter and becomes a 3-and-D guy who can also get to the rack, that's a special talent right there.
We're talking with Brian Kilbrowski, HoopsHype.com. In-depth interview with Mason Jones that Brian did. You can read there at HoopsHype.com. Brian, when you watch Arkansas tape and you see Mason Jones, you obviously see the player wearing number one. That's Isaiah Joe, who's also testing the NBA waters. What's your assessment of Isaiah Joe?
I mean, Isaiah Joe's a good player as well. I think he's going to have an NBA future one day. I think, Musk and the rest of the staff have developed him to become closer to that talent as well. I think he just took a step back in three-point shooting this year in a way that, I think he'll need to capitalize on so that he's really at a spot that he's going to be an elite shooter when he's coming into the draft. I think you got to strike when the iron's hot. And right now for Isaiah, I don't think that the iron's hot, but I could see him coming back next year being a 6'5" junior, putting up maybe 16 points a game or so, maybe even more, being the, obviously with Moses Moody, the focal point of that offense with Mason Jones in the NBA. And I could see Isaiah Joe being a good player. He's really productive in the pick and roll. He's somebody that can really create as a ball handler in the pick and roll and score for himself. I think he's a good ISO player as well. He's somebody who has always really impressed me, when he's driving to the basket. And I think that he also has done pretty well for himself, whenever he gets a shot, creating, at least in my, my experience watching him, off the dribble. I think that, he's much better shooting off the dribble than he is off the catch, which I think is really rare. The catch and shoot game is a lot easier than shooting off the dribble, but he was way more efficient shooting off the dribble than he was off the catch. His field goal percentage was 10 points better off the dribble than it was off the catch. And I think for me, that's a big tell, because I think you're going to be able to get a lot better shooting off the catch over time, whereas the dribble is something that's way harder to teach. So I think with the ball in his hands more, he'll be able to create his own offense, and that's something that I think a lot of teams are going to like about him. And I think realistically, you know, he's going to be, you know, more of the main guy for Arkansas moving forward. I think he's going to be a high usage guy. And I think, you know, with his height and his shooting ability, if he gets back to where he was after his freshman year when he tested the waters originally, you know, I think he's going to become an NBA player, probably a first-round talent in the future.
For a guy like Isaiah Joe, this process with all with everybody that's sort of put their name into the draft, is this just more about getting the feedback to find out what the NBA GMs and what the scouts think of you?
I think that's got to play a big role in it. You know, I think realistically, he is somebody that maybe could have actually been drafted higher as a one and done guy than after his sophomore year. You know, I don't think he is somebody who they'd be looking at in the first round anymore. Whereas after his freshman year, after you know he was such an efficient shooter, especially on spot up possessions and especially coming off screens and off the pick and roll, he's somebody who I think got a lot of scouts excited after his freshman year. His jump shot ranked 88th percentile in the nation, just straight up, and then off the dribble, 97th percentile as a freshman. As a sophomore, now he's a little bit older, and his numbers took a step back. And I think that you know, now he's a little, like the fact that he's older makes him less of a first round talent, and the numbers didn't back it up as much. So I think another year at Arkansas would go a long way for him to get him back to those numbers. And I think he could potentially be a first-round talent coming after his junior year because by that point he'll be more polished. So I think as a freshman, you see something that's raw, you want to gravitate towards it because he's young. You can develop that in an NBA system. And then as a sophomore, he needs more work. But I think as a junior, now he's a different kind of prospect. Now he's closer to being an NBA-ready player. And I think, you know, he's going to hear a lot of that feedback when he talks to the executives and he gets the feedback from the folks around the league who really study his game. I know that he has a lot of fans, though. I think Isaiah Joe is somebody that, that you know, I think a lot of people really do like. I think, you know, for me, he came into the season as somebody who I think projected as a first-round talent. I think just as the season went on, he dropped, but you know, I think from, you know, probably last July, I would say, until maybe December, so maybe even January, he's somebody that I think NBA teams had circled in the first round. Now I'd say he's closer to mid-second if he were to get drafted. I don't think he would go undrafted, but I think for me, he's no longer a first-round talent. And I think, you know, I think he wants to be a first-round talent, and I think that's how he came into this year. I think he can get back to that spot with a little bit more polish.
Brian, what do you think of the Last Dance that everyone has been glued to every Sunday night here the last few weeks?
I mean, it's hard not to watch it. You know, I mean, it's the thing we have to live sports, right? You know, the whole community of basketball is rallying around it. I mean, I love it. I really have been enjoying watching it. You know, I've got one roommate who doesn't really follow basketball, and you know, he didn't watch the first episode. Kind of caught me watching it, and now he's been watching every week too. And I think realistically, especially for younger players that I've been talking to, I've been interviewing a lot of the draft prospects. You know, I talked to one guy today and he was like, man, I was born in 2000. Like, I don't know much about Michael Jordan. Obviously, I've heard the name. I know all about it, that he's really great, but I'm learning so much about his competitive nature and his drive. And you think about where this younger generation, when this younger generation was born, different time period. And I think you really get a chance to learn so much about a guy like MJ through this. So I think it's really great. I think, you know, obviously Ken Burns, the great documentarian that he is, pointed out a very fair flaw in the process of that, and that MJ played such a huge role in the production of it. And then, you know, the footage belongs to MJ, so it's kind of hard to get a fair shot at him. But, you know, I don't think it's very objective journalism, but I think it's riveting. I think it's really entertaining.
Yeah. All right, Brian Kalbrowski, hoopshype.com. Big profile there, big interview with Mason Jones that you can check out. Reading through it, as we've talked about here, Mason very candid and honest about his basketball journey. Brian, thanks so much for the time.
Yeah, anytime. I'm looking forward to it, and maybe we can circle back again when Mason lands on an NBA team.
All right, sounds good. Thank you, sir.
Razorback talk show designed for smart fans.
This is Ruskin and Zach.
We've returned 26 minutes till 5 o'clock here on Ruskin and Zach. Happy to talk some National Football League right now, and we bring in RJ Ochoa from bloggingtheboys.com, covering the Dallas Cowboys podcast, all kinds of stuff. RJ with us here on the Williams Tractor Hotline. RJ, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, guys. How are you on this fine Wednesday?
We were doing great. Appreciate you spending some time with us today. The first thing that comes out earlier this week, I mean, when you get Andy Dalton and you get to get rid of Cooper Rush, I think you make that deal 10 times out of 10, right?
Yeah, you know, certainly all due respect to Cooper Rush, but especially given that the Cowboys only going to be paying Andy about $900,000 more than they were slated to pay Cooper, I think it's a no-brainer type thing, and it's something that I think the Cowboys pounced on at the right time.
You see them every day. You're around the Cowboys, get all the news. This situation with Dak Prescott, the contract, I'm assuming, will get done at some point. It just seems like Dak's dug his heels in and is basically saying, you know what, you guys strung me along for a little bit. I'm going to be as difficult as is humanly possible.
Yeah, I don't know that it's as vindictive as that kind of paints it out to be. I think it's just a matter of, you know, Dak Prescott and his team seem to want and value a 4-year contract, and Dak and the Dallas Cowboys prefer a 5-year deal. And I think that, you know, there's precedent for both camps to feel the way they do. You know, if you look at every kind of cornerstone contract the Cowboys have handed out over recent memory, your DeMarcus Lawrences and the offensive linemen of the world, they're all at the very least 5-year deals. But both Jared Goff and Carson Wentz, who belong to the same draft class as Dak Prescott, got 4-year extensions. And so I think that it makes sense for everybody to feel the way they do. And so that's the impasse. And I think that this is something that may go up to the 11th hour and maybe kind of a last minute thing. But I think that ultimately Dak's team has the leverage, so he'll probably be the one to get what he wants.
Is this, this has been drawn out for quite some period of time. Is there animosity here, or is this just the negotiating between the two sides?
No, I think this is just business. I think this happens, and I think we've seen the Cowboys, you know, be in situations similar to this. I mean, everything's obviously a little bit different. But, you know, last year, DeMarcus Lawrence needed a new deal and needed shoulder surgery and threatened not to get it. And, you know, the longer he waited to get shoulder surgery, the longer his rehab was going to be, the longer he was going to be out, the longer he was going to miss. And so he used that, and the Cowboys had to, you know, had to bite because, you know, he was ready to kind of leverage them, you know, in an awkward position. And Zeke Elliott obviously held out, and I think we saw the Cowboys, you know, bend when he was ready. And so I think this is just that. I think that Dak is kind of playing it the way we've seen players play it before, and 100% of the time, the Cowboys are usually the side to bend first.
The Cowboys obviously needed help at the wide receiver spot. They go to the draft. I mean, were you as surprised as some of the experts were that CeeDee Lamb, arguably one of the top three receivers in a very receiver-heavy draft, lands at the Cowboys at 17, and you kept hearing the word value pick. I think that's sort of cheapening what CeeDee Lamb is. I think he is the best pro-ready wide receiver in the draft.
Certainly. I mean, there's you know, there's a school of thought that I don't disagree with, that CD is the best receiver. I think that, you know, we saw the Las Vegas Raiders draft Henry Ruggs. I mean, he kind of fits the mold of, you know, what they like and what they've liked historically. He's the fastest wide receiver, and I think that a lot of people thought that Jerry Jeudy is maybe the most polished receiver, maybe most pro-ready, which is why the Broncos took him. But, yeah, I agree with you. I mean, in terms of ceilings, in terms of potential, I mean, there's a lot of people who certainly know more than I do and who study the draft more than I do who believe that the Cowboys managed to get the best receiver in the class all the way down to the 17th overall pick.
We're talking with RJ Ochoa. bloggingtheboys.com is the website covering the Dallas Cowboys. He's with us here on Ruskin and Zach. The other news is well, you get a Super Bowl winning left tackle, Cam Irving, today to help out the offensive line that's in a little bit of transition right now. That's another big acquisition.
Certainly. I mean, you know, the Cowboys have gone at their swing tackle position in a number of ways ever since the Chaz Green incident in Atlanta 3 years ago. They had Cam Fleming, who also had Super Bowl experience, granted on the losing side of it, who came over from the New England Patriots. And, you know, when the Cowboys were able to re-sign Joe Looney, they lost Fleming to the New York Giants and Jason Garrett and Mark Colombo, their former offensive line coach, who went over there with Jason Garrett. And so, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the Cowboys have a lot of options. I don't know that they're all A-plus options. I think they're all They all worthy of merit, and they all are legitimate in their own capacity. But the Cowboys have a number of combinations that they can put together along the offensive line. I think that's exciting. I think people have been waiting for that for a long time. Not that anybody wants to see a majority of the line reshaped or reformed, but to have different combinations, different guys that can play different spots is a nice thing.
The perception from outside the organization, you're there, I mean, you've been in there, you know how this the internal workings of the thing goes. The perception from the outside was that Jason Garrett was just basically a babysitter. He was there to just, you know, call plays and look good on the sidelines. How much is Mike McCarthy in the draft, in free agency, how much of a fingerprint is he putting on this? Because it seems like, and I don't want to upset any Cowboy fans, but it seems like they're making all the right moves to make this thing, to make a push at the NFC this year.
You know, I think I always thought that reputation of Jason Garrett was unfair. You know, and I know that nationally he had a different perception, you know, certainly than locally. And I think Jason Garrett worked very hard, and I think it didn't happen. And I think the Cowboys were dealt with some circumstances, just like every NFL team deals with. But I think that, because you're right, I think that it does kind of feel like everything the Cowboys are touching turns to gold. And obviously Mike McCarthy's the head of that right now. And so, you know, he goes the spoils. But I think it's just a matter of, like, you know, I mean, we've all been in a relationship and you know, broken up with that person and said, oh, I'm going to do it differently this time. Or, you know, I don't know, if you've played a video game, you know what I mean? You're trying to beat the same level of Mario over and over again. Then, you know, you finally say, okay, you know what? I'm not going to go that route this time. You know, you learn. I mean, we're all humans and we all learn. I think the Cowboys have learned from their mistakes. And I think that we're seeing them do things as an organization that they haven't done. They've invested at the defensive tackle position. They signed Joe McCoy, Don Terry Poe, and drafted Neville Gallimore. You know, they invested at backup quarterback, like we talked about, Andy Dalton. They're aggressive in free agency. I mean, they've given out more in signing bonuses this season than they have in a lot of other seasons combined. And so I think it's just, you know, I think every time zigging isn't working, a lot of people tend to zag. And I think we're just in the zag, and the Cowboys are finally catching up to a lot of teams that have been zagging for a while.
We're talking with RJ Ochoa, covering the Dallas Cowboys here. Bloggingtheboys.com is the website. He's with us on Ruskin and Zach. What's kind of your assessment of the NFC East picture right now? Is it a win the East or bust kind of situation for Dallas in terms of expectations? Or, you know, what do you kind of see the landscape right now?
You know, I think it's very obvious that both the Washington Redskins and New York Giants are in need of culture resets, and I think that's why we've seen them go out and hire the coaches that they did. And, you know, I know Jason Garrett's not the head coach for the Giants, but I think he is very, very good at that. I think he can really help mold the young offensive players that the Giants have. And Ron Rivera certainly built an incredible culture in Carolina. But this does feel like it will come down to the Cowboys and Eagles. That's really been the MO of this division, basically, in the Dak Prescott, Carson Wentz era. And, you know, they've traded some shots and they've had fun against one another. And obviously the Eagles are the only team in that stretch to win a Super Bowl. But I mean, right now, you know, I'd probably lean Cowboys. I mean, it's maybe like a 55-45 thing for me. I think the Cowboys had the better roster last year, just didn't have the coaching staff to kind of go blow for blow with the Eagles. And I think that Philly is capable and has been capable of making more out of their circumstances than the Cowboys have been. And I think the idea is that Mike McCarthy and his staff can push the Cowboys over the edge in that capacity. So, yeah, I mean, I would be truly stunned if the Giants or Redskins were players in the NFL this season. Although, I mean, to be fair, with an extra playoff spot up for grabs with a third wild card added, I mean, you know, maybe the Giants get cute and do that. I mean, I don't know, but I think the division's either going to stay in Philadelphia or head on down to Dallas.
Yeah, you mentioned the acquisition of Don Terry Poe and all of these guys. It seems like they've addressed all of their needs in the offseason. Defensive line, wide receiver, they drafted a couple of corners. They pick up an offensive tackle today. The only position that they haven't addressed is tight end. And that's, you know, they, with Witten moving on, they're a little thin there outside of Blake Jarwin. I don't know how much experience is sitting there. Is this next up, or is this one of those you maybe just let it go and you run with what you have?
Well, I mean, I think that Blake Jarwin is certainly somebody that a lot of our readers and our listeners have been fans of since his huge game in 2018 against the New York Giants when he caught three touchdowns. But he's not the only Blake in the Cowboys tight end room. He's not even the only Blake from Oklahoma. Jarwin went to Oklahoma State, and this offseason the Cowboys did sign Blake Bell, from you know, Oklahoma is in the Sooners. Everybody, I think, remembers the Belldozer from college football lore and everything. And I think that, you know, the Cowboys view that as, you know, Blake Jarwin is obviously a project right now. I mean, he's been extended, and I think there's belief that he has tight end one potential. But right now it is just potential. But it's a lot easier to be that guy in an offense that features Amari Cooper, Michael Gallup, and CeeDee Lamb. And I think at the end of the day, even if Blake Jarwin is, call it, I don't know, the 18th best tight end in the NFL, he is far more athletic than Jason Witten, which is ultimately an incredible sign for this team. And the fact that they're getting fast everywhere on offense. And so I think that that alone is a big difference, and that alone is a big factor heading into 2020.
Assuming everything goes off as scheduled, and they're going to play in early September, and there isn't a delay, they get, you know, Dak either signed or, you know, he signs his franchise. Like, how much of this team's success comes down to him? Because, it feels like all the pieces are there. They've got everything you need to win. They just need to settle that one position. And like you said, you know, the division is basically them and Philadelphia.
I think, you know, in some ways, 100%, you know, the success is on Dak Prescott. I mean, that's kind of the nature of the gig. I mean, that's the nature of being a quarterback in the NFL or at any level. And, I mean, I think that we've seen Dak Prescott will his team to victory. Sometimes, you know, a quarterback isn't enough. And I think that's true. You know, you could have Pat Mahomes, and sometimes a quarterback isn't enough. But ultimately, you know, Dak is, I mean, if you are a fan of Friday Night Lights or, you know, Varsity Blues or The Replacements, I mean, Dak is your favorite, you know, character. That's who he is. And so, and that, you know, persona is really prevalent throughout the Cowboys locker room. It sounds so cliche, but he really truly is their unquestioned leader that they all fall behind. And like I said, I mean, we could meet on set and shoot the movie right now. And so in that way too, I think that he propels them forward, and he kind of is their heart. And I think that what he does inspires really the entire team. And so in that way, you know, he kind of is part, you know, responsible for their success. But I think he'd also be the first one to say that, you know, they're a team and they all have to do their job.
When we're outside sort of the Dallas Cowboys bubble, and I mean, when you're outside of it, you know, it's America's team. And it seems like it's this very chaotic circus that goes on around Jerry Jones and all the things inside that. I mean, you're there at practice every day. You're at all the games. You're talking to the players afterwards. How much of that is reality? How much of it is, you know, media hype? How much does Jerry Jones just sort of play into it?
Yeah, I think that, you know, that's sort of something kind of like the Jason Garrett thing that gets blown out of proportion. That's kind of a movie thing that people lean on. And that's, you know, I think a great example of that is, you know, every year in free agency or somebody becomes available, I don't know, you know, we've all got an uncle or a friend or whatever that will hit you up, like on Facebook, will be like, oh, well, Jerry will pay anything for anybody and whatever. And something like that, I mean, that hasn't been the Cowboys for like a decade. But people kind of, you know, lean on, you know, their idea of the Cowboys, you know, the idea that has been passed on or the idea they've seen, you know, online or whatever. And so, you know, Jerry Jones is certainly involved in the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, you know, he's Jerry Jones, but this idea that, you know, he is, you know, this dictator that overrules every single capacity of the organization is a little far-fetched. And there are a lot of people. I mean, Stephen Jones is really involved. Will McClay, you know, a lot of people, and not enough people know Will McClay's name, the Cowboys director of scouting. And, I mean, you know, he's, you know, hugely responsible for what they do in the draft. And now Mike McCarthy. I mean, there are a lot of voices that comprise the brain trust of the organization.
Dallas, are they in the conversation with San Francisco, with New Orleans, with, you know, whoever the top contenders are in the NFC? Are they in that discussion after the draft and now, you know, going into free agency? Are they in that top two or three? Can they push, you know, San Francisco for the NFC championship?
I don't see why not. But I think that, you know, that qualification extends to a lot of teams, right? I mean, I think Minnesota's in that conversation. I think Seattle's in that conversation. I think the Rams are still going to hang around. The Cardinals could be a team to take a step this year with DeAndre Hopkins out of that mix. And so, you know, the NFL is so fun and magical that year after year, there's always a little bit of turnover and a little bit of the same. I mean, the Cowboys have won a lot of football games since Dak and Zeke entered the NFL. And, you know, they haven't obviously had as much success in the postseason as people would like. They haven't won a Super Bowl. But, you know, for all intents and purposes, they seem to have everything you need, right? I mean, you know, if, you know, you were coming over to my house for dinner and I told you, look, we've got steak on the grill, we've got some corn on the cob in there, we're making some asparagus, we're baking rolls, you know, we've got your favorite drink, I've got the temperature set the way you like, you know, We're going to have some great music on. You know, you would assume you're going to have a good time, but not every time ends up being that way. And I think that right now on paper, everything looks like it's going to be a good time for the Dallas Cowboys, but football is so unpredictable. And I think where things have fallen for them is that, you know, when things have gone perfectly for the Cowboys, they've been contenders. When all 22 of their starters were healthy, they were contenders, but they were not prepared for situations that the game of football present. And I think that these Cowboys are preparing for that. I think they've realized that there are no longer going to be reasons why they fall short. So you know what they're going to do? They're going to invest in defensive tackle. They're going to make sure they have a backup quarterback that is qualified. They're not going to pass on a talent like CeeDee Lamb if you call to them. And so with that particular variable being different, I'm personally a lot more confident in them than I have been in seasons past.
What's the one thing, I mean, if you're going to point to, you know, number one thing on the list, success and failure, what's the one thing they need to have to push past San Francisco? What's the one thing that derails this whole thing?
I think that they need to be aggressive on defense. And I know that's kind of a vague thing, but, you know, for a long time they've played this this layup game on defense. You know, everything needs to stay in front of us. We're not going to give up big plays, et cetera. And I think that, you know, they need to realize that they have the horses to go to bat, you know, on offense with anybody. And so when you can score quickly on offense, like they should be able to, you can take chances on defense. You can blitz more. You can be aggressive. You can try to turn the ball over. You can flip the field. And I think that, you know, if you don't, you're almost playing into the hand of everybody else, and you're being as predictable as you can possibly be. And that really has been their game for so long. But with a more aggressive mindset, not just on the field, but in disposition, in roster construction, the way that they've been building their roster, I think you change everything about yourself. And I think that that's the difference. And maybe that's what has separated them from your Seattle's or your San Francisco's as of late, or your Green Bay's. And if they can catch up there, I mean, you know, they'll be a lot of fun to watch at the very least.
RJ Ochoa, you can keep up with he and his team on bloggingtheboys.com, covering the Dallas Cowboys for you there. RJ, thanks so much. We'll do it again sometime. All right, appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, guys. Y'all have a great rest of the week.
All right. RJ and all our guests join us here on the Williams Tractor Hotline on the Ruskin and Zach program. Ruskin and Zach back with you here, Relationship Tuesday, brought to you by Cupids. Coming up later in the hour, Dudley Dawson from Hogs Illustrated and WholeHogSports.com with us. We'll get his thoughts on everything going on around here.
Coming He's been up. A busy guy here the last couple of days. Mm-hmm. Talking a little Hunter Yurecek.
Yep.
Some Andy Dalton. Some football.
Yeah, the Andy Dalton with his Cowboys.
Oh, he's got to be thrilled.
It's a one-year deal, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. 1 year.
So
$3 million.
We'll get into all of that and a bunch more. Talk Law and Order and whatever else. Ozark here in a little bit. 866-285-4005. If you want to hop in here on the program and text or call us. I figure the, and I can't be totally accurate about this because you're out there and I'm in here. But it feels like to me, I've been doing this long enough to know that I feel like the not and the uh-huh crowd was pretty strong in the first hour. You know, we said all the stuff about the NFL and timelines of the NBA being a bunch of weenies, and we didn't get a lot of a response, but I think we got a lot of
Except from one guy.
No, except for both, yeah.
But all he wanted to do was fight, so that's
okay. That's right. We turn it into a political conversation. No, I mean, look, there is... You are either trying to figure this out in terms of moving forward with a strategy, or you're unwilling. And it just looks like, to me, basketball's unwilling to figure
this out.
There's
a period of shock where you're like, okay, what are we going to do? Everybody gets together, puts their heads together, figures out what they're going to do, and then you better come up with a plan. There are leagues that don't have their plan together yet. You've had 6 weeks.
You've got to pick yourself up and then figure it out. The NFL has absolutely kicked everyone's butt on this deal because they're like, nope, we're still going. Free agency, happening. And that was in the middle of all this stuff. We're doing this.
We're still, the league year started on time. And boom, they got it done.
Well, what about the draft? Let's have a virtual draft. Okay. How do we do that? Well, we'll figure it out.
Well, we call our business partner, ESPN.
That's right.
And they do it. The NBA picks 60 guys. 60 guys? Yeah, 60 guys. The NFL draft had 7 rounds.
Yeah.
32 teams. I'm not no math major, but that's a lot of guys.
Yeah.
And the NBA can't figure it out. They're just stuck with the, oh, we can't have a draft. Well, you can have a draft.
Yeah. And it's a different deal with colleges because I know there's a lot of Razorback fans here listening to this show, I would imagine.
Now we've run them off.
Because That's right. The policy of talk radio, don't say anything negative about the Razorbacks and don't say anything positive about COVID-19. That's the policy, the standing policy. But colleges is different because there's this whole other component of you got to have on-campus classes. You've got to do that. And if you can get to that, then you can. I mean, everybody today is saying, well, we plan on having classes in the fall. Great. We plan on having football in the fall, but you know
that to me is optics. Is if you're going to have the games on campus, if you're going to have the athletes on campus, you have to have the students. What? It's an optics thing. Otherwise, it just looks like, hey, we want the money.
Very true.
So if we're not going to play until these students get back, you know, we can have our student athletes back, but we can't have our regular students back. You can regulate the student athletes better than you can regulate not that you can regulate them well. But you can regulate them better than your general population with whom your athletes would be mixing. And that's an optics argument. I think you could actually pull it off, but they won't because it would look bad.
Yeah. I mean, it's the NFL is just, I mean, killing everybody on this thing. I mean, it's not close. Basketball, I mean, anytime a proposed idea comes up about basketball, about, well, what if we did this? You get 15 people telling you why it won't work, and nobody tells you, well, that's a good idea. Nobody anywhere. Windhorse, LeBron, nobody is talking about, well, that's not going to work. Instead of like, well, let's figure it out. They don't have that can-do attitude.
This is actually an interesting text from Jay Step out of the 479. How can you have an NBA draft without final standings? Well, you got to end the season.
Yeah. I mean,
do you push? And this is where the pushback of the start of the next season comes in. How long do you drag this out? Because the NBA finals take place, what, the first and second week of June? June, yeah. I mean, they're done by June 15th in most cases. Yeah. So you've got another week you've got another 5 weeks to figure it out. You're not getting your season in 5 weeks. Figure out what you're going to do to end the season. Let's get underway. If you got a punt on 19-20, you punt on it. You just do. And you move on to the calendar year 2021.
The other part of this to figure out is how do you end a season and then how long till the next one? Like, do you take 2 weeks off and then start the next year? Well, I mean, how does that work, too?
If you're the NBA, you operate like the season is over and you're into your offseason program.
Let me be fair to them for a second. This happening in the middle of our season there's no blueprint on how to fix this. And I understand all of that. But what I am more bothered by with them is that anytime anyone offers up a possible solution, it's shot down immediately.
NFL is in lockstep with the commissioner. The NBA is like a shotgun. They're scattered all over the place.
Yes, they can't get a clear, concise voice because
there isn't one.
Because Adam Silver is not one eighth the leader that David Stern was, who would have had more of a handle on. So May 15th, let's go back to work. Then you get close, and we're not ready yet. It would be better if you just keep moving the date than to just be in this nebulous no man's land where they are now.
Where it looks like you're not doing anything.
Where it looks like nothing is ever going to happen again. Yeah. Robert in Fort Smith. Robert, what's going on, man?
Hey, guys. Mel Kiper and Dari Noka had a good point on Sunday on their show, though. They're like, if we go back and play football, which is fine, but if we do, and then some of your players get this stuff, what happens? That's the thing. Do you lose your rest of your season? And then let's say we get to playoff time. You lose some kids. Do you not have a playoff because your kids are sick? And so I'm like you. I'm glad that we have a date out there. But just because of that date, I don't know that how this is all going to come out. I just see what some of your thoughts are. I've been listening. But
let's take it a step further.
Thank you, Robert.
Let's take it one step further. I was talking to a high school football coach. And he was telling me, okay, what if I have three kids that test positive in October and I'm going to play another in-conference team and I've got to let the opposing coach know, hey, I got three. Do you think the opposing coach is going to say, yeah, come on up, let's play? Probably not. There's the flip side of this is you've now, you've got three infected players, again, using this in a vacuum. How many do you not know about? And that's how quickly this thing could. I'm not a doctor, but that's how quickly this, that's the fear portion of it.
No.
But again, if you are isolating and testing, and I think the idea of testing on game days is a great idea.
But you can't get the results back in time, can you?
No, you can get a quick rapid test, I think, I was told, within 24 hours, maybe less.
So like the day before or something? Yeah,
I mean, you should be able to test the night before and then send them out. Now, the question is, okay, say you get one that tests positive. Well, how many more are affected that you just don't know about yet?
But
staff, the whole thing, it's very nebulous.
But is this enough of a reason to not even try? I don't think it is.
No, but we were talking about the first hour, you've got to bring it back to player responsibility.
Yeah.
If you're going to isolate them, in order to make this happen, the players have to be responsible.
Right.
And if you don't think they can be, or you don't trust them to be, then you've got a whole other set of issues.
Yeah.
And that's where this thing gets a little sideways.
Yeah. So, I mean, here we are. It feels like that scene in Apollo 13 where Swigert and Bill Paxton's characters are screaming at each other, and then you just end up right there still in the capsule with no way to get home. I mean, it feels like that's where we are. We bounce around about all this different stuff, and then we're right back here still having to be... This is the worst thing that I remember as a kid, having to be patient. Whenever my parents be patient, oh, it drives me nuts. But that's where we are. You got to be patient because the only way to know is when they say, whenever that is, it's time to play again. So
provide the best environment for the players to play, the safest environment, and then there's a level of trust with the players and the coaches and the assistants and everybody in that arena. You have a level of trust that they are not going to step outside outside their bubble.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's going to be interesting. If nothing else, I like what Hunter Yurecek did yesterday. Okay. You've got a target date. This is how we're going to operate until further notice.
Right.
July 15th. Okay,
well,
great.
Right now, the next thing that could alter the timeline would be if the SEC extends its shutdown, which is at the end of May, June 1, the SEC is open, more or less.
Yep.
They have canceled all events through May 31st. So June 1, that's when the voluntary workouts, if you feel like coming up and, you know, being in the facilities and working out and doing stuff, that would be fine. But if the SEC moves that to June 15th or June 30th, then it kind of slides things back further.
But and the SEC, an operating plan.
The SEC footprint is the one opening up now. Those states. So they will be, this will either be fine or it's going to turn into the next disaster. Hopefully not. But we'll know one way or the other here, as long as, I'll tell you what, let's just do this. Let's just do one show a week for like the rest of the summer and we'll know everything then. And then we won't have to do this guessing game that we do every single day. How about that?
Okay, fine.
No, we're not doing that.
All right.
We're not opening soda cans into the microphones either, by the way. Because that's not a radio show, for God's sake. All right, 866-285-4005. We'll do the news, and we'll talk to Dudley Dawson later in the hour. Stay where you are.
The Razorback Talk Show, designed for smart fans. This is Ruskin and Zach.
Back here on the Ruskin and Zach program. Good to have you with us. Good to go to the Williams Tractor Hotline and chat with Dudley Dawson, Hogs Illustrated, WholeHogSports.com. A lot to discuss, as always, with Dudley. How are you, sir?
Doing good. How about you?
We're doing good. You want to start with the number three discussion?
Yeah,
because this is interesting.
All right, so I was going through the book today, the media guide. Best player to wear number three. I think we've narrowed it down to Joe Adams and Alex Collins.
Ooh.
Man, that's a tough choice there. I would say maybe Collins because of consistency, but boy, it's close.
Okay, let me ask you a follow-up, if I may, Mr. President.
You betcha.
If you're going to give me a top three running backs at the University of Arkansas, McFadden's one. Who's two?
Jerry Eckwood.
Okay.
And Ben Cowan.
All right. Is Alex in the top five?
I'd really have to put some thought in it. He's in the top 10 for sure, but I'd have to think about the
three
top
straight 1,000-yard years.
That's really good.
I don't think anybody else has done that, have they?
Well, that's true, but you got to look back at some of these, back when Arkansas ran the wishbone, some of these guys didn't get as many carries. So,
potential's great, but I'm looking at hardcore numbers. This is what he did, not what he should have done.
Well, that you know, you certainly have your parameters to use, and I'll use mine. I was alive back then, and you weren't.
Dudley, we're not that. We're not that. Well, yeah, you're about 5 years older.
It's also tricky to want to tie stuff to wins because wasn't Alex Collins' best team? Didn't they go 7-6?
Something like that.
Yeah, but where would they have been without him?
Oh, that's true.
Now, he is the best Riverdance running back there's ever been.
Yeah, that's true. There's
no doubt about that.
No, that's right. True.
And that's got to be worth something.
Probably the best prospect to get their signing day paper stolen on signing day, Dudley. Is that true?
Yeah, that was quite the fiasco, and thankfully it got worked out. But his mom had something else going on there. She did not want him to come up here, but thankfully he did, and he certainly had a very, very good career here. And you hate to think what it would have been like if they hadn't got me.
Yeah, it's true.
It would have been rough.
Yeah.
Really rough.
Yeah. Okay, so, Dudley, what'd you make of this? I mean, what Hunter Yurecek said the first time, I don't think really needed clarification, but some people get the happy fingers twittering, and they leave out a word or two, and it changes everything. But, I mean, they're planning to proceed as if they can get football practice or workouts going July 15th. September 5th start date. That seems like a perfect, today, a reasonable plan to me, I guess.
Yeah, and I do think everybody just, started to, you've got to have a plan. If you don't have a plan, you shouldn't be an athletic director, you shouldn't be an administration and all that. You have to make plans for all different occasions. This is what he wants to happen. There's no guarantee it's going to, but as soon as that came out yesterday from the Board of Trustees meeting. Everybody was, okay, they're coming back July 15th. We're going to play September 5th. This is going to be great. Well, that's a plan. That's not a certainty. I'm sure that it, helps spirit. But until, the COVID-19 guidelines continue to come down or people continue to do what they want, which is, a lot of what's going on right now, then it's still going to be in flux. You still can't go to a gym and do a lot of different things other than just walk and all that. So it's going to take some time, but I think that it was a parcel of good news in an otherwise sportless situation except for Korean baseball.
Did you enjoy that? I was a huge fan. Didn't get a lot of bat flips last night, but I'll tell you.
The players really did chip in there early on with the bat flips. Kind of got it going there later in the game. But I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the crack of the bat. I enjoyed not knowing what was going to happen. It was a nice little late night deal to watch the forensic file.
So back to this Yurecek statement yesterday. Should we just assume that every date that they give us is a soft date until they set it in stone? We just, July 15th is target. Okay, fine. That's what we're operating under. There's no need for him to keep jumping back and forth and correcting statements. He gave us the date. That's what we're going to operate under until further notice.
Right, and Greg Sankey will be giving the hardest date for the SEC. I got to tell you, I enjoyed what he said today when the Pac-12 was talking about how they may not be able to play in this season and may not be able to do anything. And Sankey said, well, we've gone through the college football playoffs for 5 years without y'all. We probably could do it again this year.
It's very true.
But yeah, I mean, I got to thank you, Phil Sankey, and really the NCAA, and I guess the president and his administration have a hand in it too. We're just going to have to wait and see. But I do feel more, I would say I feel better about it this week than I did last week, except for the fact that people rush out too quickly and we have a setback that might say, that might be But that would be mind numbing if they were going to do it and then everybody gets sick again. So
yeah, I also think everybody is kind of waiting for someone else to be the guinea pig here, and right. You know, and to have an event on our soil happen and there be no bad health consequences in terms of COVID-19. I think everybody's kind of waiting for the first one before people start to go, okay, well, maybe this is possible to do this at some point in the next 5 years or whenever to have another sporting event here. Like there are some things on the calendar this month with NASCAR and you know, there's some other stuff too. So
yeah, and I think we just got to get things rolling without audiences.
Yeah.
You know, there, and then let it just slowly ease in, like, you know, things. If we, you know, if that's October or whatever, then we'll figure it out. But I think you give people some hope if you start doing things. And with all the things that are going on right now, I think it's, you know, it's doable. Just everybody not go rushing all at one time.
No. It gives the coaching staff and the future coach, I mean, it's like you're resetting and starting the calendar year over again. You're going to start it on July 15th. It gives Sam Pittman and his staff at least something to work towards instead of just being in this constant state of flux where I don't know if we're going to go. We're going to operate under the assumption that we're going September 5th.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, no matter what facet of life is in, sports or whatever, you need hope. And that's just a little hope out there right now. I mean, that's not too bad.
Yeah. Dudley Dawson's with us here. What is this? Tell us your assessment on commitment they got in football over the weekend. This tight end,
the linebacker.
Sorry,
he's position confused.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Jermaine Hamilton Jordan is a linebacker, but he's going to play safety in Arkansas. He's a 3-star guy. Doesn't have a top elite list, but they have been on him for quite a while and really like him and really see him as a guy who could become a big time safety. And that's part of an evaluation. Can you take an outside linebacker and turn him into a safety? Does he have the speed to do that? Will he make your defense better? They seem to think this guy is. They have higher rated safeties on their board, but went after him as hard as any of them because Coach Odom, who knew him and had offered him in Missouri, had him in camp and just feels like he really knows him. And that's one thing. A lot of these kids that have been in camp in previous years have an advantage over those who are not going to be able to get into camp this summer because they have seen them up close. You can tell whether they're listed at 6'3 and only 5'9 or whatever.
I'm going to ask you because I know you and I have had this conversation before about Aaron Outley, the tight end out of Little Rock. He got an offer today from Virginia Tech, and this is a guy where the production or the potential has outweighed the production. Is that correct? Is that how we're looking at this? Is you're looking 2-3 years down the road versus what this guy's doing right now? Because the numbers just don't add up to the sort of attention that he's getting.
Yeah, I'm starting to do my top players in the state for Hogville's Trade Magazine, and I was going through a different, you know, list of different players and all that. And Aaron is a guy who looks like Tarzan. There's no doubt about that. You know, really got the body. I think he's listed at 6'5", 247 now. I think you and I both have watched him play and were impressed, but not knocked over.
Looks great in his uniform.
But the amount of people that have jumped in now is, it's just mind-numbing.
Is that
somebody else jumps in every day?
You would be able to answer this better than anybody. Is that a product of not being able to do in-homes, not work him out, not see him at camps, but you're only watching him on film and watching him catch a ball and run away from, you know, a secondary at against a 5A team?
I think that's part of it. What I also think is that there are not a lot of true tight end prospects out there now. There's a lot more H-back and tight ends that split out. And I do think one of the things he does is line up with his hand in the dirt half the time. And I think that the coaches see that and they like a blocking tight end. He ended up catching 48 passes for 728 yards and 8 touchdowns last year, you know, which are really nice numbers, not, you know, Hunter Hudson Henry numbers, but still at the same time, good numbers. But I think it's one thing that's in his favor is he's a dual tight end instead of one of these guys that just specializes.
We're talking with Dudley Dawson here on Ruskin and Zach. I know it's early, but it is still unusual for me to pull up the 247 rankings for next year and see Arkansas 10 and Alabama 12. I know it's early, but it still looks weird to me.
Well, you know, I feel like that that Alabama will probably make a move if things
yes,
come down
I
the
think
stretch.
So.
But anytime you're above Alabama in anything, whether it be a state ranking for poverty or whatever, I think it's good. And you know, they like the five commitments they've got so far. They're going to have to pick it up in terms of quality as they get from 5 to 25. I do think they've got some really good players in there, but I think that if you're going to make up the difference between you and the rest of the SEC right now, you've got to out-recruit the teams at the bottom. You've at least got to be in shouting distance of the teams at the top. So I think that while they're off to a good start, to have a great class, which I would consider top 25, they're really going to have to get going. And the problem is that all the other teams who have had success, they can not have to bring kids to campus. They can get by with this summer of not having camps and all that. But teams like Arkansas who are struggling to get back to stand back up really need that to evaluate.
You were talking about the player that picked up over the weekend who's sort of a hybrid linebacker safety. Are we seeing sort of a fundamental shift in how they're going about and looking for talent, where they're looking for not developmental players, but players that they can develop? You know, they come in as a 3-star, leave as a 4-star, guys that are better than their star rankings when they come in, versus going for, you know, the high-end 4 and 5 star guys where you're competing with the Alabamas, the LSUs, where they bring them on campus and develop them, and they, you know, they compete that way, sort of the Boise State model.
Yeah, I really do think that's a good point. And I go back to Dan Skipper, who was not the highest-rated guy, and Coach Pittman had some other 4 stars that most people would have thought ahead of him. Skipper was a 3-star. But he liked what he saw out of Skipper, thought if he could get him in here and work with him, that he could make him into a guy who would get to play in the NFL. He's certainly been on some practice squads and you know, certainly had a good career here in Arkansas. But yes, that is the one thing without a doubt I think about this staff better than the previous two, is that they see a ceiling in kids and are not just trying to immediately jump to a kid that can make a kid that could come in right away and play at a certain level but never get any better.
And then going to the NFL now, Dudley, what do you think about the Andy Dalton move that the Cowboys made?
Well, considering that Cooper Rush is the backup quarterback and we've been fortunate that Dak hadn't got hurt all these years, I think it's an excellent move, especially for $3 million with the incentive, which could take him up to 7. I am perfectly fine with it. He's not going to be the starting quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys. He'll be there 1 year, and he'll move on somewhere else, I'm sure, because Dak's going to get paid. I mean, it's going to happen.
Yeah, but isn't this a giant middle finger to Dak? Hey, we're going to bring him in. We're going to sign everybody else, but not you.
No, it is. Dak has been offered 4 years at the money he wants, but he wants 5 years. So that's where the mix is right now. That's where the problem is. But what are you supposed to do? Even if he signs, you still need somebody to back him up. If he doesn't sign, and again, they put the money on the table. It's just Dak's agents wanting 5 years instead of 4.
Best 86, Dan Hampton, Trey Flowers, or Jason Peters?
Oh.
Dan Hampton.
And it's not close?
I would say it's close, but in overall production, as you used a while ago, man was a beast.
the Danimal, he was pretty darn good.
Jason Peters was a great football player in the NFL, a good football player.
Yeah, Zach Clark made him a tackle because couldn't get the ball to him. One more question about your Cowboys. This Mike McCarthy thing, the draft, I know we've talked about the CeeDee Lamb thing and a value pick there, and did they address everything they need? The Dallas Cowboys finally get the Jarrahs out of the way and sort of address needs, because this is a team right now in the division that's wide open.
Yeah, you know, I think there was a real direction. I read a story from one of the Dallas writers about how, you know, Jerry and Steven brought, when they hired Mike, that they said, that Mike made sure, he said, I'm not just going to be a yes man here. If y'all want that, y'all need to just go and find somebody else. And they had a lot of meetings with him and Will McClay, their draft expert, and it sounds like he had a definite push in what these guys you know, did this year in terms of drafting. And I mean, they hit every mark. They got every position filled that they needed to, and did it with guys who were around behind where they were thought to be drafted. So they're really going to have to screw this one up. And you know, the publicity, I mean, the possibility is there because they've done it before. But as a Cowboys fan,
these are the Cowboys.
Yeah. Yes, yes.
Dudley Dawson with us, Whole Hog Sports, Hogs Illustrated. Dudley, thanks so much.
I got one more.
What do you got now?
Best four, Cobbs, Grovey, or Jarius Wright?
Easy. That would be Quinn Grovey.
Yeah. Really?
I think so, too. Yeah.
Quinn was great. I love Quinn. But over Cedric Cobbs?
No.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Even Jarius Wright.
Hey, taking into the full count of everything that he did as a leader and on the field.
Okay. All right.
Dudley, thank you, sir.
You bet.
I'll be good.
Dudley Dawson and all of our guests join us here on the Williams Tractor Hotline.
I thought I was going to get him on
Ruskin and Zach. It's time now. That's pretty good. I got another thought on this college football thing that I'll get to here in about 9 minutes or so. Right now, we owe you an SEC report. Brought to you by Eat My Catfish.
Started 11 years ago in a trailer in Benton, Arkansas. Now has locations in Benton, Little Rock, Conway, North Little Rock. About to go ballistic in Fayetteville. They are open for curbside service today. Mm-hmm. They'll be open very soon for dine in. Ellis, you added ESPN quarterback Garrett Nussmeier, ESPN 300 quarterback Garrett Nussmeier, to its 2021 recruiting class Monday. He is the son of Dallas Cowboys quarterbacks coach Doug Nussmeier. No, let me try that again. Nussmeier. There. He's the 62nd ranked prospect overall at a Marcus High School in Flower Mound, Texas. This is going to be kind of cool. DQ, you in on this? Women's flag football will become a varsity sport for NAIA schools. The organization announced that on Monday, the National Association of Intercollegiate Athletics has secured a 2-year partnership with the NFL and its NFL flag arm and reigning champs experiences, and they'll develop the league infrastructure and operations.
We got any NAIA schools around here?
Pitt State.
JBU? What's JBU?
I know Pitt State is.
The Gorillas?
Yeah.
Okay.
You ever been up there for a game?
No.
Oh, the place is nuts. No. That place, I mean, that's like Henderson Wachtell, but every night. Pitt State's crazy.
That's Pittman's alma mater.
Yeah. They can play some football up there. Yeah. They can play some football up there.
All right. What's the best number 10 in basketball? I think it's Ron Senior, and that's all there is to say about that. What do you think?
I love the boot, but I'll take the school.
Oh, Todd Day?
I'll take the school's all-time leading scorer.
You're taking Todd Day?
Okay. I mean,
all right.
I mean, he is the school's all-time leading scorer.
Okay.
And quick Todd Day story.
Yeah.
When he signed with his agent, we were sitting on the Union one day out eating lunch, and Todd was turning laps in his green convertible Mercedes. 18 laps Todd turned.
Like with donuts?
No. Well, back then you could drive underneath the Union, and we were sitting on top of the little bridge there.
Yeah.
And he just turning laps in his convertible, just so everybody could see. He had a
just driving back and forth.
It was kind of a mint green,
beautiful. Was it metallic mint green?
I think. And if I
like
I,
the 64 Skylark,
it might be. It might be. But he and Scotty were driving around in that thing.
Well, it could have been if it's a 63.
Not Scotty. Shoot.
Todd Day.
Yeah, it was Todd, and he had somebody with him, and I'm blanking on it.
Well, if it was 63, there's only two cars.
No.
One is the Corvette, which would never be confused with the Buick Skylark. On the other is the Pontiac Tempest. Metallic mint green.
With posit traction.
Thank you, Miss Vito. No more questions.
Yeah, it was, yes, best number 10. I look, love Ron Senior. But I'll take the school's all-time leading school.
Well, I mean, those are the two.
No, that's it.
That's the list.
And it's like one and
no disrespect to Bobby Portis, but no, I mean, no. Come on.
He's a distant three.